Welcome back, everyone. It's a new episode of Who's Editing? The Thought Experiment, in which my guest and I appoint ourselves editors of a comic book line at DC Comics, but the joke's on us, because we can only use the characters of a specific issue of Who's Who, and in fact must use them. I'm Siskoid. I'll let you in on all the rules, but first, my guest with which to create a line of books based on Who's Who Update 87, number 3. It's his third time on the show, so you know he's good at this. The Irredeemable Shag.
I was just going to ask, since it's my third time, do I get like a jacket or something like that?
A jacket for only 3 appearances? Come on.
Can I get like a patch or like even a temporary tattoo or something?
How about a permanent one?
Oh, okay. Great. I would love that. Yeah, I'm excited because Who's Who Update 87 is, there are some issues to have with this series collectively, as I noted during the Who's Who podcast, but I just have a lot of nostalgic love for Who's Who Update 87 because it's the post-crisis universe now, and it's full of great post-crisis stuff that I absolutely love. So I was thrilled when you invited me to be on this one. So thank you.
No problem. I mean, I think you're good at this.
Oh, you're correct.
Right? So I think you're good at it. So I wanted you to be on the update show when we came back. And it's, you know what? I'm really lazy. And it's much easier to take a network all-star than have to shop around for a guest.
I'm happy to bring my star power to your little show.
Thank you. You know, there's always an uptick when you're on the show.
Whatever.
I don't know. I don't have access to the numbers. So
we keep this to ourselves. We don't share this with our underlings.
Number 3 on this update 87, like you said, it's like there's a lot of post-crisis characters, a lot of updates. What were the challenges for you going back into this, and in particular, this volume of the series?
Well, I'll talk...
If any.
Right. Well, no, I had some for sure. Like, I always, when I go over into Who's Editing with you, I try to go with an open mind, right? Like, I don't try to have a strategy. I know some of your guests want to fit, like, everything within to a certain kind of world, a certain flavor, or whatever. I kind of just let the characters, or the concepts, or sometimes even just the name inspire me, right? And then just follow that muse. And in this issue's case, it turns out I found out that I love most of these characters that we're going to talk about. So, while it wasn't intentional, at the end, I sort of looked back at everything I'd done, and I really haven't completely reimagined the characters this time. Like, you know, one time we did Brother Power the Geek, and I came up with Sister Power and the Geek or whatever. You know, anyway, I reinvented a lot of stuff previously. At least I thought so. So, this time, I don't feel like I'm Karen Berger. I'm not reinventing everything. I feel like I'm more like Peter Tomasi as an editor here, because I feel like I'm just taking the toys and finding the best possible story to tell as it exists now.
That's not a bad place to be. Is that maybe because it's post-crisis, that's really your era? I know it's my era.
Could be.
You feel like a more affection towards the characters, you know, you're less, you're more precious maybe about them. For me, I will say that Lady Blackhawk was the last to crack.
Really?
She's very distracting on the cover right now. Look at it.
Her entry is distracting as well.
Yes. But it's just because I didn't have like a ready idea for her, and the others, like, they appeared to me quicker. But Update 87, they're doing all the Green Lanterns who made Earth their home, and it's really taking a toll on me. And there's two more GLs in this issue.
Yep.
And we're not even done.
You've got Cat Matui, you've got the Green Lantern Corps, you've got Kilowog, and the Guardians. You get 4, really, in this issue, kind of, sort of, but we don't have to cover all of them, thankfully.
Let me tell people what the revised rules for each episode of Who's Editing will go by during the update era. Our line of books must include a monthly series for every hero, character, or team featured, as well as any location, if and only if they didn't already get an entry in the main volume, and therefore coverage on the show. But one of these revised entries, say the Green Lantern Corps, can be added to our roster. And we can also give, as usual, a villain or other entry their own series if we absolutely feel the need to, but we can only name a single villain from the issue to receive that honor. So imagine we're coming back from some crisis or other, and we can reboot characters, we can use any continuities version, you recreate the whole thing, it's up to us. Titles don't have to match the entries. Note that myself and Shag are each pitching our own ideas, and we'll end up with 2 possible lines of books. Listeners, you decide which books you'd actually want to read, and we'll actually play that game too. Shag invented it, in fact, in episode 3.
I sure did.
And you're back on an episode 3 here.
Ah!
And so anyway, we'll have enough money to buy one title from the other editor's line. Oh, yeah, that's right. I got to take notes here. Okay.
I mean, to actually have to listen to you. Oh. I will say, I kind of broke the rules this time a little bit.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll get into it. Nothing drastic. sick, but we'll see.
Did you have a strategy going into this?
No, I mean, I kind of talked about it before. I was open-ended. I will tell you, the part of my rule-breaking is that I let some of the other entries in the issue that we may or may not cover sort of influence some of my picks. And you'll see what I mean by that as we go in.
I admit that I did the same. I just let the imagination run free. But mm-hmm. also, there's a little bit of infiltration of other concepts that I'm not using, but that are coming into the other books.
Okay.
It happens. And in honor of your presence, and the reason why you were invited on this episode, I ended up creating 3 Bwahaha spinoffs.
Oh, no way.
Because Justice League as an entry in this, we're treating it as a new entry. Because it is not of America.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I got like 3 JLI flavor books.
Interesting. Okay. I went a very surprising direction in that one. But
oh, okay.
So you create, you know what? All you're really doing is doing this in honor of me. Because when we did Blue Devil, I think I had 8 books for Blue Devil, if I remember correctly.
But we start far afield of that with Hyman. Hyman? How do you want me to pronounce it? Hyman?
Probably Hyman. Starting with a winner there.
Kirby Creation, one of the new gods they forgot to put in the first volume. We didn't make the cut, I guess. Too much of a background character. But you have to do something with this. Let me mention that for this issue, we have to include a minimum of 8 books in our line and a maximum of 10 according to the rules. And you get to start, so Hyman.
Thank you for letting me start with Hyman. This is wonderful. But here's the deal. So I really thought going into this, I thought this was going to be the hardest one to crack. I really did. However, it turned out to be the very first one I cracked, and I kind of dig it. Because, like, I mentioned earlier, I have a lot of love for these characters. Okay, well, this is an exception. I have zero love for this character, right? This is the new god no one even remembers exists. They're all like, who's that guy? Wait, was that during like the Paris Cullen series? Like, no, he goes back to the original Kirby stuff.
He invented the mother box.
Exactly.
That's his claim to fame.
I expected going into this, it was going to be like a complete reimagining because I'm like, this character is a blank slate to me. I don't even care. No one does, right? So I started with the name Hyman, right? That means nothing. So no inspiration. Well, it does sound like a female body part. But anyway, that's a little, not going anywhere near that. So instead, I started thinking like, what do we know about this guy? For example, he invented the mother box. Thank you for your patience, Cisco. He's a master scientist and theorist, right? He's a visionary amongst the new gods. He helped co-create the boom tube. You know, he rebelled against Darkseid's oppression. He's a widower. So like, okay, I'm thinking about all these pieces. Where do we go? And I ended up kind of just coming up with a story for him rather than reinventing him. So here's my pitch. This comic is called The Mother Box Mysteries. Is what it's called. And it's Hyman and Mother Box investigating mysteries is what it's going to be. It's kind of a Mother Box year one story, but Hyman's the protagonist. It's a 12-issue maxi series. I'll tell you the creative team right up front. Don't let this throw you off because I mean this in a good way. It's Tom King and Greg Smallwood, the same creative team as the Human Target series. Have I already scared you away?
No, go ahead.
Okay. It opens with Hyman, the series. He's already built this super AI, this artificial intelligence called Mother. And I'm using the name Mother sort of like you do in that British expression where someone's like pouring tea, you know, they're performing a service. They're saying, shall I play Mother? It's like a service sort of thing. And that's kind of where I'm thinking of the term Mother. That's why I chose it. So Mother is this hyper-intelligent AI who actually chats audibly with Hyman, like in conversations, like our modern chatbots. Because this is a big change I made because I thought about like the Mother Box is famously known for just using the ping, right? That's all it does, ping, ping, ping. Well, the new gods, they're like super intelligent, right? And they can't build an Alexa? Come on. But don't worry, for those of you who do adore the ping, and I do as well, it'll come back around. So just be patient. So as the story goes on, he's hanging out with his mother, this machine, this AI called Mother. And tragically, Hyman's wife is murdered. And the 12-issue story is sort of a season-long plot to investigate and identify the murderer. So Hyman, he goes to investigate. So he loads the Mother AI onto a handheld device so he can take it with him. So therefore, he calls it a Mother Box. Now, each issue is going to take Hyman and the Mother Box as they investigate to different like areas, geographic areas of the fourth world. Like there's going to be an issue in Armageddon. There's going to be an issue in Supertown. There's an issue in Darkseid's Palace. There's an issue in Project Cadmus or the Source Wall or whatever. And along the way, every issue, they're going to get involved in a new mystery that they have to solve. And I like the whole, like what Mike W. Barr did with Maze Agency. So we're going to try and play fair with the reader in these little mini mysteries each issue and give you enough clues to solve that mini mystery in each issue. So that'd be kind of a fun thing. All along, again, there's this subplot brewing in the background where they're trying, you know, each story is leading to the next. They're all following these clues to figure out who killed Haimon's wife. Well, the conclusion of the penultimate issue, issue 11, it's revealed that, of course, I mean, it's pretty obvious probably already, the murder is the AI itself, Mother. Mother has killed Haimon's wife out of jealousy. So the last issue is going to be this massive, like, running dialogue between Haimon and Mother, interspiced with lots of action and surviving death traps and stuff. And in the end, Haimon's going to defeat Mother Box with his intelligence. The postscript will be Haimon restarting his Mother project from scratch, but removing the artificial intelligence and instead going with emotional intelligence, which is what the Mother Box really is all about in the Fourth World Comics. If you read the Who's Who entry, that's actually what Mother Box is powered by, is emotions. So therefore, we get rid of the artificial intelligence, we replace it with emotional intelligence, therefore the Mother Box can't talk anymore, it just communicates in pings. So you get back to where we were, sort of. And I thought this would be kind of timely with all the focus on the dangers of AI lately.
Makes sense. The reason I giggled at your title,
okay,
is because mine is called Haimon and the Mystery of the Many Mother Boxes.
No way. I love it already.
It's one of those indie-ish titles that sometimes the big two come out with. This is the only one that I put a creative on.
Okay.
Because I don't really do that
normally. Yeah, I know. You're not a fan. I know.
But I'm putting Tom Scioli on this.
Help me out. I know that name.
He drew Godland.
Oh, right. Oh, of course. Okay.
He wrote and drew Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics. He wrote The Fantastic Four, Grand Design, Godzilla's Monsterpiece Theater.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just giving him the fourth world and letting him go wild based on that title. And if I had to guess what he'd do, I think Haimon goes around opening mother boxes, which have evolved beyond his design. And inside are all sorts of Kirby characters and realities. Olmec, Commandy, the Demon, maybe even pastiches of his other work, the Pacific Comics and Topps Comics series that were later repurposed for the Kirbyverse line. Maybe even Marvel stuff like Devil Dinosaur. I mean, it's, you know, lookalikes.
Right.
But basically, this is just wild indie comics, a little bit like the Kryptonite, the book that's out right now for Superman. That's not Tom Scioli, but it's similar. Anything kind of happens, kind of silly, goofy tributes to the past. So that's what I want from this book.
Interesting. All right, let him just go wild.
But I mean, I think yours would be wild as well and way off track, you know, with Tom King in there. I mean, I don't have a problem if it's not characters that I know and love.
Mm-hmm.
And Haimon in the far past, that's not going to affect anything that I care about.
Exactly.
So that's probably going to be a good book.
I like to think so. But if they end up meeting other famous, you know, new gods, like, you know, Bug or Highfather or whatever, sure, whatever works. As long as it's an entertaining story, that's the key.
Iron Monroe is next.
All right.
So here, what I did, it's called Iron Monroe Gladiator.
Oh, perfect name.
Yes, because I've gone back to Roy Thomas's inspiration, the 1930 Philip Wiley novel, Gladiator. That may have been one of the inspirations for Superman. I don't think that's ever been proven.
Have you ever read Gladiator?
I've read a synopsis of Gladiator. Have you read Gladiator?
I did. I actually read it in college.
Oh, really?
They had it at our college library of all places. And I was like, oh, wow. After hearing it, I mean, I heard about it through Roy, you know, through Young All-Star. Yeah. This is where I heard about it. And when you read it, it's like, oh, there's no way Siegel and Shuster did not read this. It seems so obvious. But, I mean, it could have been just, you know, in the zeitgeist. You never know.
I've taken elements of the book, remixed them.
Ooh, nice.
So it takes place in the 50s. Iron Monroe is the result of his father's experiments to create a Superman at the height of the superhero activity during World War II. But by the 50s, or late 50s, being a superhero is illegal. And he has to hide his powers as he walks through America like Bill Bixby's Hulk, never staying in the same place for long before his secret is exposed. So men in black on his trail. He's like a super hobo.
Okay.
But it's exploring the America of the 50s and the so-called the good old days and how they weren't all that good, or how they might relate to today. Obviously, that's what we're trying to do with this. But it's like the Superman of the 50s.
I really love that. I especially love the Bill Bixby, you know, sort of thing. Okay. All right. Besides the fact that he's got to keep his identity, is there a reason he doesn't just settle down and not use his powers? Is there a reason he has to go town to town?
That's the writer's job. I'm just the editor.
Okay. I guess I've been more writer than editor this time. Maybe that's my problem. I've got long stories for each one of these characters. All right.
Oh, God. Okay.
Cisco's like, I'm gonna have to edit
buckle
out.
In.
He's like, I'm gonna have to edit out so much crap. all right, so my Iron Monroe. Well, first off, let's look at who Iron Monroe is, because some of you people may not remember this character or didn't read Young All Stars, whatever. So again, I didn't reinvent the character. I looked at what was there already. So he's a teenager in the 1940s. He, as you said, he's got similar powers to the Golden Age Superman. He's faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. But he's not as powerful as Superman would become, right? Like, he can't fly. He can't, you know, pull a planet, all that kind of stuff. And also, Iron Monroe, the whole reason he was created was he's a post-crisis continuity patch for the Golden Age Superman. That's why Roy Thomas created him. So I wanted to lean into that. So we're going to give my 1940s Iron Monroe some of those forgotten traits from the Golden Age Superman, such as Golden Age Superman was like super confident. His self-confidence was through the roof. Like, he never questioned himself. He was willing to inflict injury and use, you know, intimidation when he's dealing with criminals. He'd like throw a criminal off a building. You know, if he didn't like what the answers he was getting. He solved problems with his fists, right? And he relied on brute strength rather than diplomacy. He's very different from the Superman that would come. My Iron Man rose like that. And he's going to do sort of what the original Superman did. He's going to go after slumlords, right? He's going to go after organized crime. But then let's take it further. He goes after rapists. He goes after people who commit hate crimes. And the goal here is not to create like a dark noir book. That's not what I'm shooting for. I still want to have a superhero action adventure book that hits the appropriate emotional beats. So while he's going to be tackling like these horrible crimes, I don't want it to get dreary. It's more like how they dealt with like in the 80s, like, you know, very special episode kind of things where they would deal with a hard-hitting topic, but by the end, you felt kind of uplifted. He's a Superman analog, and he's a teenager. So let's have some fun with this that I thought might appeal to you. So Iron Monroe is also going to serve as the Superboy surrogate for the Legion of Superheroes. So Iron Monroe is going to be, you know, whisked away to the 30th century for lots of fun Legion adventures. And here's what I mentioned to you earlier. I had a strategy, a little bit of letting other entries influence me, right? So here's where it starts to spill out. So after a while, you know, Iron Monroe's hanging out with the Legion, all this stuff, but they start to add other heroes to the Legion, like Valor and Kent Shakespeare and Andromeda, which, by the way, if you don't get it, all of those are other Superboy and Supergirl continuity patches for the Legion. So Iron Monroe starts to feel a little redundant or unnecessary to the team. So he resigns from the Legion of Superheroes, and he goes in either forms or joins, depending on what you need to do, the Legion of Substitute Heroes, which, by the way, is an entry in this issue, Legion of Substitute Heroes. So he forms that group with a bunch of other Superman analogs, like Ultra Boy and Laurel Kent and people like that. And again, he goes after the really bad people. So the subs are going to act in the shadows of the 30th century. They're going to take on, you know, the slumlords of the future, the seedier side of the future. He's going to go after the Dark Circle or the Dominator sleeper agents or corrupt brand corporation employees, whatever. The subs are gunning for those folks. So Iron Monroe will split his time between the 1940s and the 30th century, kind of like Superboy did. And overall, again, the Iron Monroe book should be fun. It should be an action adventure book, taking out criminals who do terrible things, but still maintaining sort of being a fun book where you feel uplifted again and the bad guys get their comeuppance. That's the goal. I wanted a Superman creative team, right? And I was thinking, again, the whole 1980s very special episode kind of thing. And I kept circling back. There's an issue of Adventures of Superman from the 80s where the staff find out that there's a Daily Planet employee named Alice. And she turns out she's homeless. And she's been living in the building secretly. And, you know, in that issue, they tackled a real life tragic issue. And they hit the emotional beats, but they still managed to keep it from being dreary and depressing. That's kind of where I'm going with these stories. So I want that creative team. I want Roger Stern and Dan Jurgens on my Iron Man Road book.
You know, I've always had this impression that Kent Shakespeare physically is based on Iron Monroe.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Like the black shirt and yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm keeping Iron Monroe's like skunk white streak in his hair. I love it.
Or else he's just a guy in a black t-shirt.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. I do love that character. I mean, I love the concept of the Young All-Stars. I did not love the execution, but I love the concept of them. And I love the character. Well, not Flying Fox, but I love the characters. It's a shame that book was what it was.
Flying Fox is the coolest, though. It's the only Canadian.
I like that aspect. Anyway, there's things to like about Flying Fox as well. Yes.
But next up is someone who became pretty important to the DC Universe, John Constantine.
Is it Constantine or Constantine?
I say Constantine. You may say Constantine. It's all good.
I say Constantine, but I think I'm wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard both. Even on live action shows or whatever, I've heard both.
I've heard it both ways. Yeah. So do I go?
It's a Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul situation.
This one, it was one of the last ones I cracked. It was so hard for me because bottom line is, I love John Constantine. K. Can I curse? I don't know if I'm allowed to or not.
This entry is mature readers only.
There we go. I'll say he's an arsehole instead. There we go. I love that he's an arsehole. He's an alcoholic. He smokes. He screws over people. He always ends up hurting the people that care about him. And he saves the day most of the time. Like, I don't want to change any of that. Like, yeah. In fact,
at a cost, but yes.
Right. Like, I don't want to change any of that. In fact, I just want more of it. Like, specifically, I want the Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon Hellblazer book is what I want.
We're very much on the same page. Go ahead.
So the way I tackled this is I went down a path of like, okay, if I'm the editor, you know, and I want more of this, what kind of new direction can I task Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon to craft for Constantine? Tiny bit of background for you folks. If you're not a reader of Hellblazer, my favorite Constantine story was a trade paperback called Dangerous Habits. And if you're never going to read it, stop listening to this nonsense. Go read it now. Anyway, in the story, Constantine finds out he has terminal lung cancer and he knows he's going to die. So what does he do? There's no way he's going to heaven. He knows he's going to hell. So what he ends up doing is he pulls this con job. It's hilarious. He pulls this con, manipulates three different demons in hell, and he offers each of them his soul. And the result is basically of the con is like, he can't die. Because if he does, because of the bureaucratic rules in limbo, if he dies, it's going to cause a three-way war in hell for his soul. So basically the demons make sure Constantine can't die and they cure his lung cancer. It's genius. And the reason I say all that is because it relates to my story here. So for the next Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon story that I'm gonna as an editor, I'm going to tell them I want them to develop is, so Constantine, we know that if he dies, he can't go to hell, right? So what happens if he does physically die somehow? He's not going to heaven or hell. So where does his soul go? Well, again, I took my inspiration from the entries in this book. The Lords of Order have the perfect job for him. John Constantine is going to become the new Gray Man. The Gray Man, if you don't know, is charged with collecting the leftover dream essence from the recently deceased. And in this story, the Lords of Order specifically recruit Constantine for the job because something's gone wrong. Someone else is getting involved in stealing the dream essence, and the Lords of Order want Constantine to investigate. So the story, and I don't see this as like his permanent setting. This is probably, I don't know, a 6-issue story, a 12-issue story, something. It's just temporary. He'll go back to being who he was. So here's Constantine. He's performing his duties as the new Gray Man, and he's investigating the mystery of who stole the dream essence. And at the same time, he's still being John. Like, he's still a jerk. He's still smoking. He's still drinking. He's still swearing. He's being rude. Everything you expect from him, right? And it's going to lead him to encounters with other folks from the DC universe. Like, I want him to bump into Dr. Destiny, right? The JLA supervillain who involved with dreams. I want him to bump into Dreamer, the girl from the new Superman. Well, she's relatively recent. From Superman and Supergirl. She's an ancestor of the Legion's Dream Girl, all that. I want him to bump into Sandy Hawkins, you know, the one that used to be Sandy the Golden Boy, who goes on to be Sand, and now Sandman, the one who has, you know, horrible nightmares. And then maybe Sandman, Lord of the Dreaming. And since he's dealing with a recently departed, he can also encounter Deadman, or Death from the Endless. And eventually, because the Lords of Order are involved, he's got to confront the Lords of Chaos. So in the end, you know, Constantine's going to solve the mystery, right? Whatever it is, and save the day. And the process will assuredly piss off everyone involved, I'm sure. So by that fact, you know, by the end, the Lords of Order are so pissed at him, they fire him from being Gray Man, and they send him back to being alive, because they don't want anything to do with him anymore, and that's how you get John to go on to other stories. So that's what, as an editor, that's what I'm going to task Ennis and Dillon to do. That's Siskoid saying he doesn't like it.
No, it's not that I don't like. To me, like, John Constantine is a character that doesn't need any changes. You were right in your original assessment, and then you went and changed him.
Just for a short story, though. And I got to come up with something to say on your show. Otherwise, I just go, I change nothing. Next character.
Well, it's almost what I'm going to do, because I want it to be called Hellblazer. I never liked it when they put his name in the title. You know, I read some Jamie Delano, the original issues. But my jumping on point was also Garth Ennis's run. You mentioned that seminal, that first storyline he did, which they repurposed for the film. It's kind of in the movie, in the Keanu Reeves movie. A sequel coming soon, apparently.
I keep hearing that. My wife is obsessed with that movie. She loves that movie so much.
But it's got elements of that storyline. It's essentially that storyline, but not as good. And of course, we go back to those writers for mature readers. Insolent, sorceress, anti-hero, lives on the edge of the superhero world. But only just, I think, like you, I would have him interact with magic characters. But no one else. I don't want him to be in Superman's pants. But like, basically none of that Justice League Dark, flying house of mystery nonsense that they've been doing in this century.
Mm-hmm. You want the Vertigo book.
I want the Vertigo book back. Mm-hmm. So a real horror book, where he's a right bastard, but you love him anyway.
I mean, that's basically what I was pitching, but I was just pitching a weird storyline. But okay.
There's nothing wrong with your storyline.
You're darn right there's not.
Okay. Well, next up is Justice League International. Here's what I got.
I am dying to hear this.
Like I said, I had three Bwahaha JLI spinoffs, but no JLI as such.
Okay.
So I was inspired by the Justice League entry to create a Justice Society International. So think just after the war, the JSA is starting to settle down, get married, have kids. But Johnny Thunder doesn't want it to end. Beloved character Johnny Thunder. So as the Thunderbolt leaves our reality, he lets Johnny have one last wish. Johnny wishes for the JSA to continue. But of course, you know, have to be careful what you wish for. So he becomes an enthusiastic, late Golden Age era Maxwell Lord a sitcom style book about the heroes that Johnny has magically recruited. I guess when they find out they weren't allowed to retire, there might be consequences. Who have the added benefit, let's make it international, the benefit of another part of the wish that grants them instantaneous access to different parts of the world, every city in the world or so. So I want mostly forgotten heroes like the Red Bee, our beloved Red Bee.
Oh, you just piqued my interest.
Right? Like he's our Blue Beetle, maybe, in a way.
Oh my God.
But at least in terms of the theme.
Mm-hmm.
I think Madame Fatal might be touchy, but fits the genre. Ma Hunkle for sure. Airwave, Mary, Girl of a Thousand Gimmicks, Bullet Man and Bullet Girl. I think the biggest names would be Robot Man and Mr. Terrific, who I see a lot of comedy potential for.
Okay.
But it's basically your sitcom Justice League, except it's your sitcom Justice Society.
Interesting. I love it conceptually. I'm having a hard time imagining what it would be like, though. I can see Kevin Maguire drawing, you know, Robot Man and Mr. Terrific bantering. I can totally see, like, you know, 9 repeated panels of them talking and, like, a punchline at the end.
It's rebuilding after the war. It's, yep. It's jokes about the JSA. It's...
Yeah. Thursday night's pizza night. Yep, I get it. So Justice League or Justice League International, believe it or not, this was a tough one for me to crack. For those of you who don't know, I actually ran a Justice League International podcast for 8.5 years. So I have a lot of experience with this group. And what I didn't want to do was more of the same. So I tried to think differently. I looked at a couple different approaches. One was I thought about a team in every major country, sort of like, you know, Justice League America was here and Justice League Europe and that sort of thing. But, and then I was like, well, the more I thought about it, I was afraid it would turn out like Alpha Flight, where everyone's not a unique individual, more some sort of, I don't know, representation of something people know about the country. And I didn't want that to happen, although I love Alpha Flight. I thought about maybe making it about the embassies, because, you know, like Justice League International is famous for having embassies. And I thought, okay, maybe it's about the staff of the embassy. Maybe it's like a Downton Abbey sort of thing, where it's about the people that serve the Justice League sort of thing. I thought that might be interesting. Then I started playing around with the whole idea of Justice League International, the word I. Like, instead of international, what else could I do? Justice League Intergalactic. Or Justice League Intent, or Justice League Interpersonal, or Interdimensional, and all these things. And I finally, again, took inspiration from this issue and settled on Justice League Infinity, just like the revised entry for Infinity Inc. in this issue of Who's Who. So my book is Justice League Infinity, and just like Infinity Inc., this is going to be about the legacy characters, the sons and daughters. But this time, it's going to be the sons and daughters of the JLA instead of the JSA. And the team is going to be composed of Robin, Damian Wayne, Superman, Jonathan Kent, although I prefer to have him when he's Superboy, but whatever. Trinity, who is Lizzie Prince, who's Wonder Woman's daughter, but she's a little kid right now, or non-existent really, whatever. So there's probably some time travel shenanigans involved getting her there. There's also some time travel shenanigans getting Aqua Girl there, which is Andy Curry. She's Aquaman and Mara's daughter. Then we've got Wally West's daughter, Irie West, who... Her superhero name is Thunderheart, which I didn't realize. I thought she was Kid Flash or something. That's terrible. But anyway, I use Irie West. I like her. Then Red Arrow, which is Emiko Queen, which is the half-sister of Oliver Queen. Then you get, just for fun, throw in Teen Lantern, Kelly Quintella. She's a great character. She's not really a relative or a kid or a daughter, but she's great. I love her. Then throw in Gold Beetle, who is Lily. I love this character. She's a time traveler. She's descended from Ted Kord and Booster Gold. She showed up in some of the Flash comics a couple years ago. She's super fun. She's hilarious. And then you'd have two older chaperones who sort of look over the Justice League Infinity kids. You'd have Tim Drake, Robin, and you'd have Miss Martian. So, yes, it's a team with two Robins, I'm aware. But that would be my Justice League Infinity. They'd have a lot of teen-related adventures. You know, kind of like a Teen Titans, but more, again, the sons and daughters of the JLA. So the parents are always sort of looking over their shoulder. They're breaking the rules of the chaperones to try and do the right thing. And, of course, they're building a found family out of all of it, right? And for a creative team... Like, the two kid books that I love are, like, Super Sons and Young Justice. So I want to kind of combine the sense of adventure and the friendship and the fun from those two books. So I'm going to use writer Peter Tomasi from Super Sons and the art from Todd Knock from Young Justice.
Oh, nice book. Really nice book.
I think it'd be fun.
Well, you know, not too long ago, New Frontier.
You're talking about Future State?
Future State. That's the name. You know, like that Justice League, that there was a Young Justice League like 10 years in the future or something.
Yep. But it's them as teenagers, though.
Yeah. But, that, you know, it's basically that kind of cast of characters. Mm-hmm. And I really like that Justice League book.
Yeah.
So I'm all in for this one.
Cool. Hey, that Justice League book was one of the better ones out of Future State.
Yeah. I have a book that's kind of like Future State. We'll see.
Ooh.
First, let's get into those Green Lanterns. What do you have for Cat Matui?
Okay, so this one's not a terribly long pitch compared to the other ones, right? Because I don't want to overcomplicate this one. The basic concept is the book's called Green Lantern, and she's the star. I mean, because, like, she's a great character. So I looked at what she was. I read up on her. So the idea here is she's just going to keep having lots of cool Green Lantern cosmic adventures overseeing her sector of 1417. If you don't know Cat Matui, she's most famous for being John Stewart's wife and all those things and dying. But before that, she was the replacement Green Lantern for Sinestro. And I found this out from the Who's Who entry. I'm not claiming to have known this myself. But according to Who's Who, she originally had a beloved husband. She was going to quit bringing Green Lantern to go off and live a life with this guy. But then Dillweed, Hal Jordan, shows up and talks her out of this relationship because the Guardians of the Universe made him do that. So as far as I'm concerned, screw that. We're rolling back the clock, and we're going to put her back together with this guy. So her and Immy Khan is her boyfriend's name. So her and Immy are still going to be together. I love John Stewart, but I'm going a little different here. So Cat Matui, she uses Korriger as her home planet. You know, her boyfriend Immy acts as her like scientific man in the chair. There she's battling monsters and alien conquerors and supervillains, and she's standing up for social issues on Korriger. And she even battles like a cult of devoted nutjobs who preach the beliefs of Sinestro. All the while, she's doing her job and helping people while struggling against the rules and bureaucracy of the Guardians of the Universe, who have an entry in this book, by the way. So, in fact, the Guardians are the antagonists in some of the storylines. Not the bad guys, but just conflicting with Katma. Like, envisioning, I'm like totally ripping off another character is what I'm doing here. Like, there's another Green Lantern named Sorinik Natu, who is the daughter of Sinestro. And she's really an interesting character. Like, I really liked reading about her in the Green Lantern Corps book. She's a cool character, so I'm probably borrowing heavily from that. But she's cool, so who can fault me? So for my creative team here, I wanted to bring some of that Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel sort of space female energy. So I'm going with Kelly Sue DeConnick. And for art, I'm going to go with Patrick Gleason, who was did the 2000s Green Lantern Corps book. I really liked that.
That's a great team. I don't understand why with a name like Green Lantern, which is pretty gender neutral.
Mm-hmm.
They've done things like Sector or whatever, and they've had plenty of female Green Lanterns.
Yeah.
But they never thought, oh, okay, let's retire Hal Jordan, and instead of Kal Rayner, it would have been a woman. They never went that way. Like,
well,
I don't think there's ever been a woman who has headlined a book called Green Lantern.
Right. I was going to say, you've had Green Lanterns, that female ones that headline, like Far Sector. Or
Far Sector, that's the name, yeah.
Or even Teen Lantern, who was, I mean, she didn't headline the Green Lantern book, but she was heavily in it for a while there. But they weren't the headliner and of a book called Green Lantern, you're right. Jade was for like 15 minutes in the 90s, I think.
Okay. Well, Cat Matui is a great character to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I did not dump John in this, quite the opposite. I also turned back the clock. I decided that Action Comics Weekly never happened. That's where she dies.
Oh.
So we have something. It's not called Green Lantern. It's called Heart Traveling Heroes.
You just said you want one leading a Green Lantern book, but okay, go ahead.
You gave us this title.
Oh, okay, I got you. All right. Heart Traveling Heroes. I like the name already.
Heart Traveling Heroes. It's a book starring loving couple Cat Matui and John Stewart on their extended honeymoon, going to exotic locales on Earth and elsewhere in the galaxy. It's a matrimonial romance comic about the start of a marriage, literally the honeymoon period, combined with, of course, superhero action and relevant messaging, because this is also an update of the seminal O'Neill Adams GLGA series.
Ooh.
The Hard Traveling Heroes.
Right, right.
So it's a pun, and on that pun, I've built my empire.
Well, I love this idea. Like, really. So give me an example. So, like, I mean, I've read The Hard Traveling Heroes. So what is The Hard Traveling Heroes? How are the echoes of Hard Traveling Heroes going to echo forward?
That's the writer's job. I'm just the editor.
You're dodging these things left and right. All right. Fair enough. Okay. I like the idea. So how do you keep John from overshadowing Cat Matui in the story then?
You just make her more badass, which she is.
Okay.
But I think if you have a couple that works well together, I think I'm thinking of Hawkman and Hawkgirl, for example.
I'm not sure Boss would agree with you, but okay.
he's turning around. He got married this summer, and he's turning around on Hawkman. Stay tuned for the next FW team up. Because it's going to be Hawkman.
Ooh.
And we'll see where he is now that he is also married.
Okay.
Granted, it's his second, but it's the second time. But I think, in this case, I think if Katma Tui is very much an equal to Jon Stewart in character, mm-hmm. in force of will, which is important to Green Lanterns, I don't think there's any overshadowing. Like, Katma Tui got a raw deal.
Yeah. Very much.
They killed her off in the 80s, and that's it. I mean, it's she's remembered as somebody who got fridged.
Yeah.
Basically. So we bring her back. She's just as much a Green Lantern as Jon Stewart is. She has more experience than he does.
I think she's a little before him. I think you're right. Yeah, I think she trained him. Yeah. She was his trainer, if I remember right.
So that's interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the maybe that's why he's got some affection for a hot teacher, and that leads to more. 2 pages later. It's Kilowog, more Green Lantern stuff.
Interested to see what you do here.
Well, I ditched the Green Lantern stuff.
Okay.
So this is my second JLI spinoff.
Mm.
It's called Kilowog's Garage. It's a comedy book in which Kilowog has become the mechanic to the superheroes. In these stories, he services everything from the Batmobile and Blue Beetle's bug to Space Cabbie's taxi. He builds new vehicles for heroes who think they need them, gets into a bit of vehicular action on occasion as well, taking a page from Fast and the Furious movies or something. The supporting cast might include Ginny Hex, Pat Dugan, Tom Kamalku, since they're all mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly also, and this isn't in his entry, but I read up on Kite Man.
Oh my gosh.
From this very issue, who is reputed to have worked on the Joker-mobile.
Oh, interesting.
And who is in this garage, servicing villain vehicles under the table, unbeknownst to the boss. What a poozer. So, of course, there's going to be that subplot of the traitorous mechanic.
I got to tell you, I love this so much. I'm a big fan of Kite Man anyway. I've always thought he's so ridiculously stupid that it was just fun. And then on the Harlequin cartoon, which I had no intention of falling in love with, but I did. he's brilliant on that show, too. So, and I love Kilowog as the JLI guy. So, oof, I thought I knew which was my favorite entry, but now you're giving me a run for my money here. This is tough. This is tough. This is a great one. I love it.
And did you not ditch the Green Lantern stuff for him?
Oh, I leaned into it hard, my friend. Yes.
Green Lantern Academy.
Basically, kind of, sort of, but I went total humor. And again, inspired by other entries in the book, we have a Green Lantern Corps entry in the book. So this is Kilowog and the Green Lantern Kitty Corps, because I love me an all-ages book. I will tell you right off the bat, I am not being creative with my creative team. Of course, it's Baltazar and Franco, okay?
Of course.
So you can picture exactly the artwork and style I'm talking about. It's basically, it's Tiny Titans or Superman Family Adventures for the Green Lantern set. So what I'm doing is, Kilowog is the loudmouth, always screaming drill sergeant for a bunch of adorable, precocious, like, lantern kids, right? I mean, they're going to be silly, short strips, a lot of fun, military comedy. So think Sad Sack or think Beetle Bailey, but for Green Lanterns. And I just love this idea of the Green Lantern Academy, or whatever you want to call it, where he's the drill sergeant. You're going to have silly stories where, like, characters like Goldface are, like, trying to break into the Green Lantern barracks to steal their cookies or something. Or the Tattooed Man is going to use his tattoos to, like, make little adorable kitty cats come off his arms to distract the kids while he sneaks into the base to steal, like, I don't know, planes for the science cells or something. Or Sinestro. Like, Sinestro at this point is still going to be Green Lantern. He's going to be, like, a high-ranking general, right, in the Corps. So he's going to be your typical general, like, you get in Beetle Bailey or Sad Sack or whatever. He's going to come do inspections of the barracks. And of course, wacky hijinks are going to ensue. He's going to trip over like a yellow mop bucket that the kids left out by accident. So Sinestro ends up face down in the mop water and he's furious and yelling at the kids. I mean, it's just silly fun. And I just love the idea. I can just totally see what Kilowog would look like, where he's actually in the air. He's yelling so much, his mouth's open, screaming at these kids. And I think it would be a lot of fun.
We use Baltazar and Franco for Chip in a previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a Green Lantern book in there.
Yes, absolutely is.
No, I love this. Let's take a moment just to appreciate the art. We're looking at Lady Blackhawk, and we'll be right back. Lady Blackhawk, Zinda Blake, No, I'll let you go first. Well, I collect my thoughts.
Well, let's just point out that the entry is drawn by Brian Bolland, so it's very distracting. On the cover, it's by Eduardo Barreto. She's stunning. I mean, I went back and looked up her original appearances, actually, today, just wondering if she was always a bombshell. Yes, she has always been a bombshell. So she is stunning. So I had a lot of fun with this one. I really like this one, and you guys probably won't, but you know, y'all are foolish then. Looking again, didn't reinvent the character at all. Looked at what's there. So we've got Zinda Blake, right? She's a World War II ace pilot. She's a marksman. She's excellent at hand-to-hand combat. She's a total badass. She doesn't need to be reimagined, but what she needs is a story hook. So I give you my new monthly title called The Eagle and the Hawk. These are the World War II daring and death-defying adventures of Lady Blackhawk and her new partner, Wonder Woman, who is Hippolyta of Paradise Island. Once again, Hippolyta's in this issue, inspired this idea. Basically, you know, Zindi, Lady Blackhawk, she's on a mission on some, I don't know, over some remote stretch of ocean. Her plane is shot down. She crashes into the water, barely surviving, and she washes upon, of course, Paradise Island. There, the Amazons help nurse her back to health. She befriends a whole bunch of the Amazons. She proves herself worthy in combat, because she is an expert fighter. And Hippolyta takes a special interest in Zinda and listens to her tales of man's world. So, kind of, sort of like what happened in post-crisis continuity, skipping the time travel nonsense, Hippolyta, or Polly, takes on the mantle of Wonder Woman and comes to man's world to fight against the Nazis in World War II. So the Eagle and the Hawk focuses on the pairing of Lady Blackhawk and Polly Wonder Woman as they team up for these missions. So Zindi's flying the missions. She's offering combat support. Well, Polly's, you know, she's the strength, right? She's plowing through the Axis tanks and all that. You get lots of World War II action. You get soldier combat. You get, like, stuff on the front lines. You get deep undercover. You're going to get missions with espionage. And, of course, I mean, again, looking at these entries, you're going to have some stuff where they're undercover as femme fatales, of course. And Zindi and Polly are going to be true partners. They're going to be best friends. And while we'll never actually find out in the comic, as the reader, you do get a little bit of a will they, won't they kind of vibe between the two characters. And it's written by Gail Simone. And the art is going to be by Dave Stevens, because of course it's going to be. And then when he can't keep up with a monthly book, we'll give it to Brian Bolland. And then when Brian Bolland can't keep up with a monthly book, we'll give it to Dale Eaglesham, and then Dave Stevens and Brian Bolland can just do the covers.
Okay. that's going to be a gorgeous book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I am not ditching the time travel nonsense.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So when Zero Hour transports Zinda Blake to our era, she decided to recreate the Blackhawks in our time.
Mm-hmm.
It's her solo book, but it's really a Blackhawks book with a team of aviators defending the skies from enemy fighter jets, killer drones, and blimp-loving villains. You know the type.
Mm-hmm.
Her twist, it's all female pilots. Kind of like Pussy Galore's Flying Circus.
Okay.
We'll get one of those artists known for sexy good girl art. You named a couple.
Yep.
and make Zinda pretty sex positive, have lots of romances both within and without the squadron, so mine's a little gay too. And crucially, the best aerial action in comics. I think it's worth it to have a balloon buster in the group. I want a balloon buster in her. I'm going to nickname her Ball Buster, but it's still Balloon Buster. I want an equally female Hop Harrigan. I want a Joni Cloud. I want to mine all of those aviation comics.
I love it.
Versus people like a modern day enemy ace would be their arch enemy. And then, of course, the DCAU's Roxy Rocket needs to be in there as well.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Sounds like a lot more fun than the New 52 Blackhawks book.
That fake G.I. Joe
right.
Blackhawks.
Right. Well, hey, anything with Lady Blackhawk, the way you describe, works for me. That sounds good.
I turn the page and I see Lady Shiva. Simple in this case for me. Lady Shiva is a high-octane martial arts title in the style of Hong Kong action cinema, which is one of my loves. Shiva is, in this book, a super spy for a secret global organization. She's sent into missions like she's Michelle Yeoh in a super cop movie. It really writes itself, or at least there's plenty of material for the writers to steal from. In terms of battle-ready look, I don't really like this, whatever she's wearing in this entry, but we'd go for some later interpretations. There's a red tunic, long trench coat look that she uses a lot.
Yeah, the Birds of Prey look, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it would be. And at home, I think it'd be fun. I mean, it doesn't say here because they didn't know yet, but she's Cassandra Cain's mom, mm-hmm. isn't she? So we'd have like a 6-year-old Cassandra Cain being raised in this world as the kind of running subplot. Like maybe, you know, Uncle Richard Dragon and Uncle Bronze Tiger are always coming home to like babysit or something. But I would have like this charming element while she's also going on these Mission Impossible things.
Interesting. Okay, I like your idea, because if I recall correctly, Cassandra Cain's actually raised by her dad, which is why she was trained to be an assassin. And I don't think she even got to do much of the raising of the child. So
no, I'm flipping that.
Yeah, I like that.
And she's still being raised to be an assassin.
Right. Of course. Of course.
What about you, Lady Shiva?
This was the last one for me to figure out. This was the biggest struggle. And actually, this is a little timey-wimey as far as the time of recording versus when you hear this, but this was a topic that came up recently in a discussion we had with some folks about female villains being redeemed. Because basically, the struggle I have with Lady Shiva is that she is an assassin. But every story I read about her in comics is all about the heroes trying to convince her to become a hero, some sort of redemption arc. And I struggle with that. Like, I'm all about a redemption arc for a villain. That's great. But she's not a crook. She doesn't rob banks. She murders people. So if she's going to become a hero, she's still leaving this trail behind her of assassinations. The redemption story for Shiva doesn't work for me because she's a straight-up murderer and has been for years. It's not like she killed one person. She's killed tons of people. So I decided for me to work on this character, I have to revamp her some. I'm not doing a complete reimagining, but I'm playing with her timeline to create a story that works for me. So if you read her early history, you know, she did work side by side with people like you mentioned, Richard Dragon, you know, Bronze Tiger, The Question. She's got this history of working with them. Then she's got this whole history of the League of Assassins is too, making her a big time killer. So if you keep the fact that she's DC Universe's greatest fighter and you shift the pieces around, you're going to get my vision. So I'm sort of telling the Lady Shiva story through the lens of partially the Punisher, more probably through the lens of Anakin Skywalker. This could be an ongoing series. Well, it actually, you know, probably works better as like a 12-issue miniseries because it needs a definitive ending. But the story is going to span several years. We start with Lady Shiva as a hero. She is working side by side with Richard Dragon and Bronze Tiger and The Question. You know, she's doing all the great martial arts stuff you want her to. She's the world's greatest fighter, and she gains a lot of attention, and she's even recruited by some superhero teams. Like, maybe she's in with the Outsiders, although you won't like that. So we'll see. She's in with the Justice League, right? I mean, she could be a Justice League, or why not? So she's one of the premier superheroes of the DC Universe. And she's a friend and an ally to people like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, all of them. And she trains tons of other heroes to fight in martial arts, just like she does in the comics, right? Because she's trained everyone. If Wildcat didn't train him, then Lady Shiva did, is how it works in DC Comics nowadays. So she's beloved by her fellow superheroes, the media, the general populace, all this. But then things start to change. Shiva can't stand watching so many criminals avoid conviction by technicalities or light jail cells or escaping from prison, whatever. And she can't stand these horrible individuals being on the loose. So she's got to do something. So in addition to her public superhero persona, she's going to secretly go vigilante. She starts hunting down the villains who escape justice. And at first, she's just like trying to scare them straight, right? She's like scaring them, threatening them, telling them to turn to the side of the angels or whatever. But eventually, and this is part of her backstory, she hunts down the man who murders her sister. So in my story, you know, he's a particularly disgusting guy with no remorse. So she crosses the line and executes him. And she feels terrible. She's murdered a human being. It's not what she's about. And the guilt eats her up until she faces the next unrepentant, despicable criminal. And she has no choice but to kill him too. So this continues for a while, the string of criminals being executed, sort of like a Punisher.
Easier and easier for her, yeah.
Exactly. Now, she's only killing horrible people, though. Keep that in mind. But the other superheroes start to investigate the string of murders, and it's eventually discovered it's Shiva. So she's only got two choices, turn herself in and go to jail, or go on the run. So she goes on the run. The problem is she's famous now, and she's branded a murderer. So where does she go? The only organization that'll take her in and offer safe haven is the League of Assassins. Not her first choice, but she needs some support. So she goes to the League of Assassins, and she gets in her mind that she sees a path for the League of Assassins to reorganize into a group for good. So, for example, she's thinking, like, you know, what wouldn't the world be a better place if villains like the Joker were killed? Well, yeah, it would probably. So she quickly rises to a leadership position in the League of Assassins, but she's always fighting against, you know, the history of that organization, the structure, the inertia of that organization. So while she's trying to steer the group, she does find herself doing dirtier and dirtier work. You know, she has to execute some regular people along the way, like politicians, like, you know, greedy politicians or corporate raiders or whatever, in order to move that organization towards saving the world. In her mind, she's doing the right thing for the world, you know, kind of like Ra's al Ghul thinks he is, and only she can see the harder decisions that need to be made. So in the end, she thinks she's the hero of the story, but really she's become Lady Shiva, like Queen of the Assassins. So that's where the story ends. Lady Shiva is now one of the greatest villains of the DC universe, but she thinks she's saving the world. So each time the heroes have to face off against her, she's obviously a bad guy, but they're also dealing with the fact that she was one of their friends. They cared about her. So there is no redemption arc for her. Instead, if it's the fall of a hero, that's the story I would tell with her.
A corruption arc.
Yeah.
No, I like how you use DC history or her own real history to make this a pretty emotional story, a poignant story. I joked about Cassandra still being raised as an assassin, but I did use the word super spy and I sort of avoided all the assassination stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think my book would be about that. I'm sort of whitewashing her a little bit.
You kind of have to. I mean, otherwise
she's a villain.
She's a horrible villain that you think's cool.
Yeah. Because when I was going through this issue, originally I skipped Lady Shiva because I thought villain. But then I read the entry. No, I guess she was a hero. And, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of entries. So I decided to keep her within the heroes.
Yep.
But she does have this dark past and she's been going back and forth depending on the storyline.
The writer is the problem there. Yeah.
This is actually the last of the new entries in the book, which means we're up to our revised entry. Optional, obviously, but I know we did it.
Well, here's the problem is I told you I broke the rules. So what I did, rather than doing a revised entry, I incorporated every single one of the revised entries into what I've already done.
You used the Green Lantern Corps, the Guardians, Hippolyta, Infinity Inc., Krypton? No, you didn't use Krypton.
That's coming in my villain entry.
Oh, okay. All right. And then the Legion of Substitute. You're right. Okay.
Yep.
You used them all in the revised entry, which was optional anyway.
Yep.
Here's mine, I guess. Well, I just couldn't resist the subs.
Sure.
This is who I am. So, and this is, of course, my third and last JLI spinoff.
Oh, perfect.
The book takes place in the contemporary DCU, and it's called, and this is going to be like really nitty gritty kind of continuity, but it's called League of Substitute Heroes.
Oh, I love this already.
They're the losers who didn't make the cut or refused to join when the JLI had that recruitment drive in Justice League America number 42.
I remember the issue well.
The Will Payton Starman, El Diablo, Hawk and Dove, and Gypsy, plus new characters to fill out the group, of course, including the Creeper, so that this entry makes sense now. They think they can do better than the League. They're deluding themselves. There'll definitely be some comedy shenanigans related to Monarch, because Hawk is in the team. But the first order of business for the group is finding a veteran leader who will be consistently exasperated with the team. So that first storyline, that first trade paperback, you know, is the quest for a leader loaded with guest stars. And I'm thinking possibly this acts as a tribute to various characters that Keith Giffen has worked on over the years. I have my Kirby homage book at the top hit there. Mm-hmm. And here in the back, there's I think a Keith Giffen would be a nice tribute to the man at this point, especially if I'm doing a JLI-style book.
I'd love to see Hawk ask Lobo to be their leader. That's fantastic.
You know, Lobo and Heckler would be some of the outliers. But of course, I mean, he's worked on so many things. Doom Patrol, and I mean, there's enough to go around, I think, for at least for a 6-to-8-issue storyline. And I don't even know who the leader will turn out to be at the end of this.
Vexed.
Which was a pretty cool book, but I don't know how this works. But maybe. So that's my revised entry. Let me give you first dibs then on the villain entry.
Well, I broke the rules again. I actually have two, but it'll all make sense in a second.
All right.
So my first one is the Luther Core Files. Or if you don't like that, you can call it the LexCorp Files. I'm not particular on the name. Sometimes it's LexCorp, sometimes it's Luther Corp. I just went Luther Corp.
I say Corp, so.
There, Corp, okay. It's the Luther Corp Files. The book stars an investigative journalist. You know, think like a Ben Urich kind of guy trying to prove through investigative journalism that Lex Luthor is committing a bunch of crimes. And so, and this is your typical post-crisis Lex Luthor, right? The businessman, the entrepreneur, secretly a criminal kingpin. And Lex will appear in the comic from time to time, but he's not the protagonist. The protagonist is the investigative journalist, because again, it's called the Luthor Corps Files. And it's definitely got a criminal noir vibe, investigation comic. It's dirty. It's scuzzy. It's an ongoing series. And we're going to publish in like 4-issue chunks, kind of like Sandman Mystery Theater in that way, where it's like, you know, it's dirty, it's gritty, 4-issue chunks. This one's going to be drawn by Phil Hester, by the way. And sometimes the protagonist is going to change. between the four-issue blocks. Like, maybe it's a different journalist for a different paper. Or maybe we do a whole four-issue story from the perspective of a Luther Corps employee that suspects that's, you know, a regular guy who suspects that something's not on the level. Or maybe even, like, a four-issue story from the perspective of an inner-gang flunky or something like that. And, again, Lex is always behind whatever the problem is, but they can never pin it on him. And maybe they'll prove small little things and catch, I don't know, not Lex, but maybe they catch one of his assistants or something. It's going to be just very mature readers, a lot of, like, talking and dreary diners and back alley discussions. There's going to be a high death count. There's going to be a mafia style kind of thing there. And then we're going to get a very fantastical four-issue storyline, which is going to feel out of place, but there's a reason for it, where our investigator, he sneaks into Luther Corps trying to get the dirt right, and he finds himself transported to the planet of Krypton. And he is completely confused. I mean, it's a stranger in a strange world. It's this noir dark book on Krypton. But by the end of the four issues, you find out he's actually just caught in this, like, holodeck. It's all illusions created by Lex. Like, Lex stole a bunch of data from the Fortress of Solitude, and he's been trying to study Superman, and he had his own little version of Krypton, and the investigative journalist got caught in it. So he still gets to learn, you still get to view a lot of Krypton through the lens of, like, a noir comic, but it's not actually there. If you're going to do a crime book, you got to have Ed Brubaker. So that's kind of where I was going with that. The other book is starring Ian Carcool. It's a single issue. He's born, he lives a boring life, and he dies. Nothing interesting ever happens to him. The end. So there you go.
Well, well, you'll get a kick out of this.
Okay.
Because in deference to Who's Who in its entirety, and this network favorite that you just mentioned.
Oh, no.
Yes, I went with Ian Carcool.
Well, it's not getting my vote.
Well, he's not really in the book.
Oh, okay.
It's called DC Eternal. And in the first issue, we get a quick battle between Carcool and every DC hero. And lots of villains besides. That ends with him exploding and irradiating what seems like DC's entire stable with energies that will make them long-lived. Then, the series features story arcs in which heroes have only slightly aged in DC's various future settings. So, for example, you'd have a story arc where you might have Batman dealing with the Great Disaster.
Oh, wow.
You might have Wonder Woman teaming up with OMAC. You might have Impulse living long enough to join the Legion of Superheroes. I tried to fit Infinity Inc. in there somehow, you know, like say that they would call it DC Infinite, but I thought that was maybe too confusing. So it's DC Eternal. So it's my little future state idea for an ongoing book, but we're looking at our heroes that we love, except they projected into the future.
Interesting. I love if you could remove the Ian Carcool piece and just use some other guy's name, I'd be totally on board with that book.
Mr. Nebula explodes.
Oh, this is interesting. Tell me more.
Yours was a joke, but mine was real.
All right.
So finally, I guess let's follow that well-established tradition that we have just enough money to buy one series from the other editor's lines. So
just to reiterate, this was my idea. I came up with that idea, and I'm still proud of it. Who goes first, you or me?
You.
Oh, okay.
You're the originator.
Gotcha. So I'll tell you, I've been taking notes as we go on your various stories. I love the Iron Man row. You know, the Bill Bixby, wandering town to town, Golden Age Superman. I love that idea so much. That was my front runner for a long
time.
And
I had time to think about your question as well. And I think he doesn't settle down because he's a teen.
Ah, okay.
So all he's right. Like, he can't keep a job. He doesn't have he didn't complete his education. So he's always getting caught.
Little Route 66. Okay.
Yeah.
I really like Cat Matui's Heart Traveling Heroes. I like that. The Legion of Substitute Heroes, the League of Substitute Heroes sounds hysterical. Like, as long as it doesn't turn into like a one-star squadron. But it sounds like it could be really good. But you got me with Kilowog's Garage. Just the idea, because I love Kilowog as the JLI handyman. I just adore him as the handyman. That's my preferred role for him, actually, is the handyman. Yeah. And so seeing, you know, even Adam Hughes drawing him working in the garage, fixing, you know, the whiz wagon, and there's Kite Man in the corner, you know, fixing Riddler's Riddlemobile or something, just cracks me up. I love that idea. I want to read Kilowog's Garage. What about you, buddy?
Well, I think, you know, your Kilowog book obviously spoke to me as well, because I love the Baltazar and Franco. I've read all of their books, even the stuff that's not DC Comics. And then you had Lady Blackhawk was also very interesting. But, you know, I'm a Legion fanboy at my core, so it's got to be Iron Monroe and the Legion of Superheroes. I know that's not the title.
Really? Well, now that could be the title for a while, yeah. Or the spinoff or whatever.
Yeah, I think your Iron Monroe through line, which had adventures, you know, back in his time, and then had adventures with the Legion, and had adventures post-Legion, I thought there was like a lot of nice variety, and it, you know, I think that character could really grow and learn and stay fresh, even though in many ways he's one of the oldest concepts at DC.
Yeah,
if we go back to 1930, pre-DC. So I think, yeah, I think I gotta go with my boy Iron Monroe.
Awesome, I love it. I think if I had to pick one of my own, I'd probably pick the Eagle and the Hawk, but that may be just the artist. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think one question that I've never asked really, or sometimes we mention it, but I think, oh, maybe that'd be like a fun question is, like, which one would you keep for yourself? Which one would you be writing yourself?
Yeah, oh, there you go. Yeah.
All right, well, that's the issue done. Dear listeners, it's time to go to fireandwaterpodcast.com. Tell us what you think. Would you read any of these books? If you were in charge, what series would you offer using these characters? And if you like this content, of course, think about visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/FW podcasts, like Diablo Frank and Doug Adamson, who both sponsor this show. I hope you had fun your third time around, Jag.
I did. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And the temporary tattoo, it stuck. Like, most of it got on my skin really good, so it looks good.
Awesome. Anything you're working on that you want to mention?
Sure. You can find me over here on the Fire & Water Podcast Network on shows such as Who's Who, the definitive director of the DC Universe, where we're covering Who's Who Review. We're covering a lot of old classic entries. You can find me on my own shows, JSA in the 90s, where I'm talking about the exploits of the Justice Society as published in the 1990s. You can find me on Once Upon a Geek, talking about any number of topics. Maybe it's Back to the Future comics. Maybe it's Blue Devil. Maybe it's Star Trek. Any number of topics that changes from episode to episode. Or on my most recent launched podcast, Marvel Star Wars From Empire to Jedi, where I am covering the Marvel Star Wars comics talking that take place specifically between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi from 1980 to 1983, which are lots of fun. And then quarterly, you can find me on the best segments of FW Team Up, discussing Marvel Team Up, all about Spider-Man with some guy named Siskoid.
And we might also mention that we'll soon be dropping an episode of Hero Points, the DC Heroes role-playing game podcast, on the Let's Roll feed. Shag and I are like recording every 2 weeks.
By the way, that Let's Roll episode is going to be amazing. You can find the same episode over on the JSA feed. What? How could this be, Siskoid?
It can be because it's, you know, it's related. Also, I bet we're going to talk about Ian Carcool some more.
No, we're not.
No, aren't we?
I'm going to check the index right now.
So thanks for trying the experiment with me again. And until next time, who's editing?
We are.
Why has Space Cabbie never been shown as an informant for the Green Lantern? That makes total sense. He's a cabbie. Everybody talks in the back seat, forgets about the cab driver listening, and then he knows what's going on. He tells Guy Gardner, you know. So just try to bring in those concepts and weave them together and really embrace that wider cosmic tapestry.